You're listening to Neurodiversity at Work.
Life can be so shady. The way some people try to bring you down. Why they got to be so crazy? Always trying to give you the run around.
Welcome to today's episode, sponsored and powered by Dynamis Group. Recently honoured to be part of 300 years of leadership and innovation. We at Dynamis believe that business is a catalyst for positive impact in the world by building a bridge between the top leaders of today and the brightest leaders of tomorrow. We inspire them to do things they have never done before. And we're here for another episode of Neurodiversity with Theo Smith, where I meet incredible friends from the community, where we find out about their background, their story, their journey, and their connection with neurodiversity. Today, I'm very privileged to be with Andrew. Andrew, would you like to introduce yourself to the audience? Let them know a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Yeah. Hi, Theo. Thanks so much for having me on. My name's Andrew McDonald. I also go by the name the Neurodivergent Copywriter. I'm a copywriter and marketing strategist who specializes in both working with neurodivergent business owners and with businesses to make their marketing more neurodivergent friendly. I do that because I'm neurodivergent myself, and so therefore, like, my journey has been influenced by my neurodiversities, and I want to help other neurodivergent people to avoid going through some of the struggles that I did when I was kind of starting and growing my own business.
Brilliant. And is copywriting the thing you've always done, or actually was there a transition period? And how has neurodiversity impacted that? You know, how has it influenced your approach to copywriting?
From the point of view of a writer, no, I wasn't always a copywriter, but I was always a writer. Even as a young child, I remember writing stories, writing letters. I always loved the writing process. As a young adult and then into adulthood, I continued to write as a freelance journalist, and was published in sort of national newspapers, regional newspapers, national magazines, including like Woman's Own and different magazines and publications around the UK and within Ireland. I recently was in a job as an employee where the atmosphere was incredibly toxic, and I suffered quite a lot of bullying, and bullying that targeted my neurodiversities. As a result of that, like, I was really wounded. I already had trauma issues prior to that from other things that had happened in my life, but that kind of really accelerated the trauma. I had to leave for the sake of my mental health, and I was faced with two options: either go back into employment or try and start something myself. So I opted for the try and start something myself because I was terrified of the same situation repeating itself. And I started out I looked at different sorts of writing that I could get into. Copywriting really attracted me, and I started out doing copywriting, mostly at the start volunteering as a copywriter with different charities to build up a portfolio, to learn different things and try different things. That was very successful. But then I started to follow the advice that I was hearing from gurus and experts about how to build my business, how to get clients, and that left me very, very ill very, very quickly. And I kind of pushed myself to a point where I really pushed myself beyond the point that I should have done. I should have kind of woken up quicker to the fact that the methods that they were telling me weren't compatible with my personality.
That's fascinating, because what you're saying there, if we unpack that, is not just were the recommendations from guru advisors on copywriting, on marketing, on how to sell your services in your business, not only did they not work, actually they were detrimental to negatively impacting your mental health and well-being, right? And when we think about that, this is something we come up time and time again. It's for people who identify as being part of a neuro-minority, autistic, ADHD, dyslexic, or a co-occurrence, you may be all of the above. It's not just the things that are in place that are deemed typical, normal. It's not just that they don't work. It's that they negatively impact. They hurt, right? They hurt. And that is really interesting. So just thinking about that experience then, and the feeling of how it negatively impacted you, and then what you decided to do with it, what you learned from that experience, and then what you thought, right, I'm going to do something about this, and actually I'm going to do something about this, not just for me, but for other people who may not have the ability to get the help, the support, or the knowledge that they require.
We, as neurodiverse people, we're constantly having to navigate a neurotypical world. And it's a neurotypical world that often doesn't take account of the way that neurodiverse brains work and how they work differently. It's kind of like, you know, I take a size 11 shoe. If I try to force my foot into size 7 shoe, it ain't going to be comfortable. It's not going to work. And it isn't about not having neurotypical practices. It's about having neurotypical practices, but making space for neurodiverse people to use what works for them, because it doesn't mean that we can't achieve the same result. It means that we just have a different way of getting there. You know, for me, things like gurus and experts, particularly with copywriting, love to tell you that the way to business success is through cold emailing. But if you have, like, for example, I've OCD is one of my neurodiversities, and one of the ways that my OCD manifests is if things aren't perfect, I can't stop fixating on it. And that means that, you know, it's with cold emailing, the rejection rate is incredibly high. Even top guys at it will tell you that a 5% success rate is great. You're performing well if you can get a 5% success rate, which means that 95 of your emails aren't landing. And it often involves, or mostly involves, the worst kind of rejection, which is just that you end up being ignored. If you have suffered as a neurodiverse person, if you've suffered bullying, if you've been in places where you felt that you don't fit in, then that being ignored is very triggering of those past experiences. And I don't blame the people who are receiving the cold emails, because they didn't ask for you to turn up in their inbox. And to be honest, we all do it anyway. Like, we all get emails that we just ignore. I know of people who are phenomenally successful using cold email. And I'm not saying that neurodiverse people can't use it. But it was a method that I tried for months and months and months, and the rejection just ate away and ate away at me and destroyed what little self-confidence I had. So I eventually reached a point where I was on the verge of breakdown and really seriously considered chucking the towel in on what was my dream. And it was almost by accident. A couple of different ways of building up business came into my sort of peripheral vision, that and I explored them and have found them much more fruitful, and found more importantly that they work with my personality.
Brilliant. So on that basis then, what are those things that you've adapted and changed? You know, how would you support other people if they're considering either promoting their organization, promoting themselves, because we're, you know, personal brand is quite important these days for us all as well, to ensure that we can be seen and heard, and especially for ND people who may miss opportunities for promotion, for recognition, or just to make sure that they can be seen and heard enough so that the people can buy their services, right? Which is a big challenge for, I think, ND entrepreneurs. A lot of them often may really struggle to share with people what they do, and therefore maybe other organizations that have not been designed in an ND-friendly way win, you know, win the business that they did. People should be winning, but they just can't communicate it well enough or in a way that makes sense and that doesn't have a negative impact on their mental health. Well, what are your thoughts? What advice would you give?
I think that a lot of neurodiverse people, again, I hate saying all, because we're all individuals, and there'd be some neurodiverse people out there who'll be thinking, what's Andrew on about? Like, I use cold email, and it works brilliantly for me. I'm not talking about all. I'm talking about something that I've generally found. I think for neurodiverse people, it's much more effective to build relationships. I'll give you an example. You've one of the leading neurodiversity podcasts. And before kind of suggesting myself as a guest to you, we spent time building up a relationship, so that when I came to you with the idea of me potentially being on your podcast, we already knew each other. We already had that relationship, and it turns it from the transactional aspect of cold email, which is kind of like, can I come on your podcast? Yes, no, okay. And there's no relationship there. There might be one built off being on the podcast, but there's no kind of getting to know you phase beforehand. I think it's much more effective for neurodiverse people to build those relationships, and sometimes you actually have to proactively ask for the opportunity. Sometimes the opportunity will come to you, but it's a slower process, it's a slower build, and I'm not going to lie that you do need a degree of patience for it to start happening. But let's take that to another level. Okay, so you're doing some form of outreach, whether that be guest blogging, whether it be networking on LinkedIn, guest podcasting, but you're getting yourself out there, you're getting your name out there, and you're doing it in a way that's building relationships. Then people are engaging with the content that you're putting out there. And you need a way of capturing that interest. And the way that I suggest that people do it is by creating some kind of mailing list with a lead magnet that they sign up for, so that they join your community. And this is the focus, is building your own community, getting to know people, so that you're building that know, like, and trust factor. Rather than this sort of cold email of, do you want me to work with you? Yes, no. Do you want me to work with... And it's kind of rapid fire. You might get some yeses. You'll get a whole lot of no's. You're actually building relationships with people at every stage. And as you build your community, you're building sustainable business around yourself rather than that sort of boom and bust cycle that the methods that the gurus and experts like to teach often results in. You know, obviously, they're very kind of feast or famine type tactics rather than focusing on relationships which can help you build a sustainable, whatever it is, whether it's employment or self-employment around you and around your personal brand.
Brilliant. And I like the example reaching out by the podcast because it's true as well. I'm you know, lots going on in my mind. Either I'm specifically reaching out to somebody who I want to come on a podcast because it fits in line with something I want to know, because that's why I started the podcast, because I was interested in speaking to people to hear their stories. So there's that element. I hear about somebody and think, I want to speak to them. That's a level of energy. Mm-hmm. And the other one is where people approach me. But often I get so many requests that I haven't got the time to go and validate and look. And whereas if somebody's engaging with me beforehand, then I'm not working hard to find out about them. I'm finding out about them because they're commenting on my posts. They've maybe sent me a message. Maybe I see some of their posts then, because the connection on LinkedIn is the algorithm. You know, it's we start liking each other's posts and all of a sudden you see more. So it's that natural part of my day's activities rather than thinking, oh, I've got to go and look at Andrew's stuff and figure out whether mm-hmm. or not he's going to be right. And so I absolutely buy into that. And also, I think sometimes people can get scared about the idea of putting yourself out there. But actually, it's you can put structure around it and it doesn't have to be that complicated. And sometimes it's as much as saying to somebody, hey, I like what you do. Or, mm-hmm. hey, I'm interested by what you do. Or, hey, what do you do? But in a not, I want to drain your time, in a way that I'm in really fascinated and interested by your world. Here's some insights from me, or let me know how I can help and assist you. And that idea of community, and especially actually, you'll know this, it's not that big a community, you know, in reality. So therefore, you can quite quickly add value, make good connections.
Yes.
But you probably, and this is where you could come in, Andrew, you probably need to build some structure around it and have some level of consistency, or get somebody in who can understand it, who can support you, can build that structure for you, and then hold you accountable, which is one area where we've also seen coaches be really supportive for some people who are ADHD or autistic, where they may struggle to see things through. So the idea and concept they get, but then the barrier becomes that maybe continuing to see that through, because we may get excited by lots of different things on a different day, which is me all over.
And a lot of, not all, but a lot of neurodivergent people struggle with energy levels. And getting on anything that is kind of like a hamster's wheel, like cold emailing, like going to networking events, which can also be very intimidating for people. I mean, it is for me, for coming from a position of trauma. It can be very intimidating and it can be extremely draining for that reason alone. I mean, I don't suffer with energy. As long as I get a good sleep at night, my energy is okay. But if I go to an in-person networking event, then I'm tired afterwards because it's out of my comfort zone. But you can do this in gradual ways. Like you can use, I mean, LinkedIn is a great resource for communicating with people, for networking from the comfort of your own home or office. the one thing that I would say on that is you see a lot of people doing it what I would call what I would say is wrongly. You know, they'll go to people's posts and they'll comment something like "great post" or "I agree" or something, you know, something along those lines. And the problem with that is you're not adding value. If you read somebody's posts and you actually make a comment, you know, comments that are engaged with their posts, taking your own understanding of what they've posted and may, you know, leaving a question for them to continue the conversation, that is much more productive than this kind of "I agree, great post, that's great" sort of thing. Because really, that ain't personalized. You can put that at the bottom of anybody's posts, and also it doesn't give the person, the original poster, a way into the conversation. So you're looking for ways to make it as easy for them as possible. And then coming back to the mailing list idea, if you're somebody who struggles with energy regularly, your mailing list email can go out once a week. But you can write it when you're feeling good and send it out at the same time, still automate it to send it out at the same time every week, so that you're writing it when you're feeling good, rather than kind of getting onto that, also getting onto a content mill of having to put out content every day, several times a day. You know, there are different ways of working and different ways of achieving goals. And what I want to do more than anything, rather than kind of prescribing something, even when it comes to, I've spoken about mailing lists a lot, even when it comes to mailing lists, I don't want to prescribe for people. I just want to make people aware that there are other paths out there to success. And just because the methods that neurotypical gurus and experts that are completely focused on neurotypical people, just because the advice that they have, that they put out that you find it doesn't work for you, doesn't mean that you're a failure. It just means that you need to look for different ways, different paths, different strategies that suit your personality better.
And I guess one of the biggest things that we now know is communication, both ways, always, can be one of the biggest barriers to understanding and acceptance. And it may not seem that it's such an obvious thing, communication, but it's the lack of understanding that can create barriers, can break down relationships, whether that be personal relationships or relationships with managers. And those things can happen over a period of time as well. So if we're thinking about the way that we communicate and how we're connecting with people, it is really important if we want to build that community and the relationships and the understanding. And the more we can, I guess, double down sometimes into the micro communities, which is huge now in terms of micro influencers, all the better. So I guess what I'm saying there is not to be afraid to be able to lean into your significant strengths and your quirks, the things that make you, which is exactly what you've been saying there, where you were trying to work on other people's methodology and their ideas, mm-hmm. and it was just something not quite working. So I guess there'll be a lot of people there who just don't know where to start and don't know how to get off the ground and are working really, really hard. But unfortunately, they're on the treadmill, as you mentioned, you know, and it feels like every single day they've got to go out and win some more work or write some more content. And I think you're right with the LinkedIn thing around adding value as well. Actually, just posting less, but increasing the level of value and maybe focusing on smaller communities can give you much more value. I think people get exhausted with the idea that you post something and you don't get much engagement. But mm-hmm. LinkedIn, the way the algorithm works is when you post, the minute you post something, if you want to post something of value, you should immediately, when you post that, go and start commenting on other people's posts. Because that'll increase the visibility of your post to others, because immediately you'll pop it up to their feed. But I love the idea of don't just then go and like and say, great post. Go and find five posts and give something meaningful. You can even put in neurodiversity as like a hashtag to find, or ADHD or diversity and inclusion. So you're going to find posts from people who are talking about those specific topics. And I think that's just a great way to elevate your status, engagement, visibility, but also to get your post seen, because you spend so much time and effort putting it out there, your thoughts and ideas, that they can just disappear in a second, and that can feel quite debilitating as well.
Yeah. And what I'd say as well, with in terms of connecting with people, my strategy is I find somebody who is within my target for whatever reason. I don't kind of just go posting. I don't comment on randomly. I find somebody like Theo, who's an influencer in the neurodiversity community, or I find somebody whose work is related to mine. I go and comment, wait for them to come back. And if they come back, then I send them a communication or a connection request with a message based on the thing that we were talking about. And you started from there, and it's surprising the opportunities that can come, you know, that way. But it's all got to lead back to somewhere, Theo, because if you're doing all of this, yet you've got nowhere to capture that interest, it's almost for nothing. And that's kind of why I keep speaking about a mailing list, because a mailing list is a great place to capture that interest, to capture the interest that will naturally come from speaking with other people, being on other people's podcasts, being on other people's blogs. And it's all about trying to create and cultivate your own community so that you don't end up on that treadmill of I've got to find work, so that you can build a community, so that your business becomes sustainable rather than a desperate race to get work somewhere all the time. And it's and as you were saying, Theo, it is a small community. It's surprising how quickly, once you start linking with a couple of people in the neurodiversity community, you'll find that more and more people in the neurodiversity community become your second connections on LinkedIn, which means that you share a mutual connection. And it happens very, very quickly. You know, there's a lot of linking in the neurodiversity community is very good at supporting each other and connecting with each other. You know, one of the best things I did was get involved. And I'm still not where I want to be yet, but I can see myself getting there. And it's a great journey. I really want people to get away from this idea that because the methods that neurotypical gurus and experts tell you, you know, they're very good neurotypical coaches and experts, not all of them, but a lot of them, at telling you methods to use. And if those methods don't then work for you, that you're the problem. But I say no, it's the other way around. It's that those methods haven't been designed with you in mind.
But this is exactly it, isn't it? Just as the environment, we've not got a problem with the 4.5 billion years of evolution on this planet. We've got a real problem with the last 200 years of built environment, infrastructure, ways of working, ways of living, ways of communicating.
It's the last 200 years of globalization and industrialization that have probably had the greatest negative impact on a proportion of our, a proportion of us in terms of the way that our minds work and how we engage with the world. So I absolutely agree with you. And I think also we need as a community to support the community. So I see loads of, you being the ND copywriter, right? I see ND lawyers, I see ND finance experts. All of these people are not just advocating for being ND themselves, but they're also saying they have a particular interest in supporting people in the community in all their different areas. And I think we should have a sense of urgency to support all of those people, because in reality, when we hear those conversations, when I speak with you, Andrew, and I speak to lots of others, and we talk about the trauma, a lot of us are doing what we're doing because of stigma, because of trauma, because of barriers, right? Because we weren't let in the club. So we need to go out elsewhere to find a way to put a roof over our heads, to pay our bills, to and so I actually think supporting people in the ND community, like supporting people, I believe supporting people in your local community, buying locally where you can, you know, supporting it where you can. I think fundamentally we need to get to that as well, because otherwise those individuals are not going to be able to be sustainable. And unfortunately, that then adds to the weight of the challenges that we've got around a disproportionate amount of people who are autistic being out of work, a disproportionate amount of people who are dyslexic and ADHD being in prisons, a disproportionate facing barriers that they shouldn't face. So with that in mind, Andrew, just tell us a little bit about what the future looks like for you, what you hope for, what you hope to see, and what your aspirations are.
I want to see, kind of, you touched off it there, Theo. I want to see neurodivergent people helping each other to grow and helping our community to be as strong as possible. I'm not going to say that we're not going to get any help from the neurotypical people, neurotypical community, because we will. You know, we will. There will be people who, for whatever reason, want to see neurodivergent people succeed. But the bulk of that kind of push, that pressure to get neurodivergent people on an equal playing field, is going to come from the neurodivergent community itself. It's going to come from people talking about neurodiversity. And, you know, who can really talk about neurodiversity better than somebody who's living it every day, who knows the struggles, who knows the challenges? And I want to see us growing strong, but growing stronger together. And, you know, people that are a little further ahead, helping people that are a little bit further behind, who then in turn, when they become stronger, can pay it back by helping people that are coming up behind them. And then, you know, as I said, my experience, the neurodiverse community is very good at supporting each other. They have a lot of investment in helping each other grow. And I want to see that continue, and I want to see that get bigger and bigger.
Absolutely. And I think that is something to be hopeful for, and something we can achieve without the help of others, right? Because that's about us. Yeah. It's about the actions that we take. It's about what we do as a community. And I sometimes think as communities, we can do incredible work together. We can also work against each other as well, though. So I think being mindful of that and trying to support one another where we can, I think, is really important. And hey, that was the point of this podcast when I started it, was to try and lift up others. So if people want to contact you, Andrew, I've seen, you know, your LinkedIn page that is good. It's update. It's got exactly what we've been talking about today. It's got all the relevant information there. I'll put a link in so that they can find you there. Anywhere else you would like to send them, Andrew, if they'd like to learn more about you and the work that you do?
Yeah, I offer a free marketing outreach guide to building your own marketing campaign as a neurodiverse entrepreneur. That's available at www.andrewmacdonald.biz/book. That's free. And that will, by signing up for that, you'll also be signing up for my mailing list, where I'll be sending you tips on a weekly basis for methods of marketing that are more neurodiverse friendly. And also from that link that I've given you, you'll also be accessing my website, so you'll be able to see more about what I'm about and more information and portfolio and so on. So that's the best place to go to you.
Brilliant. That's wonderful. Listen, Andrew, real pleasure having you on. It's great to hear stories from the community. And I think communication is key. So I think you're not in a bad space to support the community for sure, Andrew. And really appreciate you giving me your time today.
Thanks so much for having me on, Theo.
You've been listening to Neurodiversity, Eliminating Kryptonite, Enabling Superheroes. Hope you enjoyed the show. You can like, share, comment, find us anywhere on any good podcasting host. You can also do some further reading up and buy my book, co-authored with Professor Amanda Kirby, Neurodiversity at Work. You can get it on Amazon with Kogan Page, our publisher, and pretty much any other good bookstore. Enjoy. Look forward to your feedback. And keep listening to the show. Thank you.